Hello, everybody, and welcome to Kentucky Ag Matters, a podcast designed to inform and educate both producers and consumers about all matters affecting agriculture. On this week's show, David, Jay, and Vicki will visit with Dr. Carl Bradley, Extension Professor and Specialist in Plant Pathology for the University of Kentucky. This week, we will discuss soybean diseases, as well as get a brief update on the 2022 wheat crop. And as always, we'll wrap things up with this week's timely tip. Thanks so much for joining us. We hope you enjoy the show. Hello, everybody.
Hey, Jay.
Hey, Jay.
Morning.
How is things today, David?
Pretty good. Pretty good.
A little dry?
Just a jag. Hopefully, we'll have some rain by the time this airs. I really hope we have some rain by then, because things are looking pretty tough.
A lot of folks that listen to this know we're in the western part of the state. David and I both live in Christian County, and we're not like the good people of Webster County. We've been missing all these rains that have come through.
It's all about how you're living.
Not be living right, that's all I can tell you.
I know we're not living.
Some people pay the preacher more than we do, Jay, I guess.
I guess you got to know the preacher to be able to do that. So,
well, we did get 4/10 of rain this weekend, and it was we was happy to get it. My husband and I was talking about the garden and said, well, if it doesn't rain, we're probably gonna have to water the garden. So Sunday morning, he got out. I'll give him credit. He got out and he got everything ready to start watering the garden. Then it started raining. So I told him he may have to do that every time we need a rain.
When the small shower started, I got out trying to pick everything up. I think that's why it quit. I was out in it for 30 minutes and never got wet.
Yeah, no, it just barely got the concrete wet at my house is all we had, so it's getting pretty tough. And, of course, we're in Bowling Green, and it's a lot worse over that way than it is here. North of us here is in pretty good shape, where Vicki and, you know, like McLean County and those places, they're in pretty decent shape. The corn looks really pretty good, but down this way it's starting to twist, and over in the Bowling Green area it's twisted. That's all you can say.
Yeah, even in Hopkins County, from Slaughters to White Plains, it's like two different counties. You know, the north end of the county has received some of those rains, a little part of them every time one's come through. But southern end of the county and on into Christian, like I said, east of here, they've been missing quite a bit of that. So,
I guess we've had wheat harvests started, so those of us has got some wheat wheat's coming out and. Seeing combines moving down the road again, so always a nice reminder to share the road and be friendly. But
absolutely, when any time of the year, whether it's planting or harvesting, when big equipment's on the road, we want to try to do all we can. Be patient and allow the equipment plenty of time and plenty of space.
Yeah,
to
always
do what it needs to do.
Encourage folks to wave with their whole hand too. You know, that's always a good thing. And instead of just one finger, it works a little better that way.
Yeah. Well, what was
be
it?
Friendly.
We had a guest a few weeks ago refer to that as the California howdy.
Well, yeah.
I never had heard that term before. Well, we got a guest with us today, Dr. Carl Bradley. He's an extension specialist in plant pathology, and he's going to be here and talk to us a little bit about soybean diseases. So, Carl, welcome, and tell us a little bit about yourself and your work both at UK and Illinois before you came here.
Yeah, sure. Well, first off, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. I've been here since 2015, 7 years already. Kind of time flies, hard to believe. But prior to coming here, I was at the University of Illinois doing similar work. I was in Champaign-Urbana in the middle part of the state, but I grew up in southeastern Illinois. I actually grew up right across from Union County, Kentucky, Shawneetown. Ridgeway actually is the name of the town I'm from. And not too far from Vicki.
Yeah.
And so a little bit closer to home, actually. I work on soybean and wheat diseases, and there's plenty of things to work on, I'll put it that way, here in Kentucky as far as diseases. A little warmer, more humid. Like you said, we have been a little dry, though, and hot, although we cooled down here recently. But may not see so many foliar diseases this year if this type of weather pattern continues. And I guess that's one of the big things we're going to talk about a little bit this morning.
Sure.
So you mentioned
go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, you mentioned wheat, and just, you know, I know we're going to talk about soybeans primarily today, but just give us a little update on the wheat, the 2022 wheat crop, kind of where what you were seeing maybe through the growing season, but particularly now toward the end and harvest, you know, as from a disease standpoint. I know we got a lot of rain when that wheat was flowering. Mm-hmm. You know, it was wet conditions, and sometimes that leads to some issues further down the road. So just talk a little bit about that.
Sure. Yeah. Our biggest wheat problem biggest disease problem in wheat has been Fusarium head blight or scab. Same disease, just we call it different things sometimes. And one of the biggest issues with that is that fungus that causes the disease. It produces a toxin that will contaminate the grain, and that toxin is known as vomitoxin or deoxygen of alanol is the official name, or DON or DON. So I guess I'll call it DON. So that's usually the biggest issue, and that's now's the time of year when we find out about it, when grains go into the elevator and they're testing for it, and we're finding out what kind of levels there are. So I've heard of some issues in the state. Other parts of the state seem to be okay, so it's a little bit hit and miss. But apparently there were some fields, especially in western Kentucky, that did have some high DON levels. And so that's something that we need to pay attention to. Anybody that's growing wheat, really right now is the time to be thinking about managing that very important disease, and that's from choosing varieties that have a high level of resistance to Fusarium head blight. That's the very first step. And then fungicides is another part that is a very important part, but I've always told people that you really cannot fix a susceptible variety with the fungicide. So when you have conditions that are very favorable, Vicki, like you mm-hmm. mentioned, a lot of rain, when wheat's starting to flower, that's kind of perfect conditions for this disease. And so when you have perfect conditions, even if you spray the very best fungicide on a susceptible variety, you're still going to end up with some problems. So that's what's kind of going on. Fortunately, I don't think that problems were widespread, but there are some individual areas that did have a problem with high DON levels in wheat.
I talked to a producer over in Henderson County, and he had said that he had got docked just a little bit at the elevator, but it wasn't a huge problem, and so he was kind of relieved.
Yeah, that's what I was fixing to say. This year, probably the first year in a long time, I hadn't heard as much about DON as I normally do from producers. So I guess that's a good thing. You know,
it's a good thing that there's, of course, the wheat market's really good. The world needs a lot of wheat right now, and hopefully we have a lot of good Kentucky wheat to get out there on the market.
Well, and before we leave the wheat subject, you had mentioned, you know, the planning starts now, you know, if you're going to manage this particular disease. And with the supply issues that we've all experienced for the last 2 years, if there's varieties, particular varieties that you're really wanting or really needing, you know, you might want to be talking to your dealer pretty early to get your name on what you're wanting pretty early, because if not, you may not be able to get what you need or as much as what you hope to be able to get. So.
Definitely.
We hope as we move forward that some of these supply chain issues might take care of themselves. But I think at least for maybe the next 3 years, we're probably going to feel the effects of them at some point. So,
unfortunately.
Unfortunately, yeah. That's exactly right. So, you know, we're in a new year. We're not completely wound up with this wheat crop, but for the most part we are. Most of it's been harvested, and a lot of double crop soybeans have gone into the ground. With this particular season, what are some of the first things that producers need to be watching for with this new soybean crop?
So we're kind of done with wheat, and I'm the same way in my program. We do a lot of wheat trials, and now all of a sudden I've got to really think about my fungicide trials in wheat, or on soybean. And so, you know, at this point in time of the year, I think soybeans right now, I'm sure there's variation out in the state. A lot of my soybeans are probably about V5 or so, and there might be some that are a little bit past that, so five trifoliate leaf stage. It's a good time if you have a little break from harvesting wheat, go out and look and see what's going on. I know there's a lot of herbicides that are probably being applied right now, but that's also a good time to do a little scouting for diseases, see what might be out there. A little early to be seeing a whole lot of foliar diseases. Generally, we don't see a lot of things until we get a little closer to that row closing, that canopy closing, where you don't really see the soil anymore when you kind of look across the field and the rows kind of start to blend together. And I think for a couple of reasons, that's kind of when we start seeing diseases showing up, mostly because of that there's just less airflow that's happening through that soybean leaf canopy at that time when you have all that foliage there. And that keeps that foliage a little bit wet for a longer period of time. And we think about the pathogens that cause foliar diseases of soybean. They're all, well, not all of them, but the ones that we care about mostly are fungi. And so you think about what kind of conditions fungi need. It's usually wet conditions. So that's really when we start seeing much soybean diseases, although foliar diseases, although there are a few out right now. Kind of the big ones that we worry about here in Kentucky would be frog eye leaf spot. That would be at the top of the list as far as foliar diseases of soybean. There's another one that we've been seeing the last few years. It was kind of something we didn't worry about, but right around 2016 or so, it was showing up a little bit more and more. And I've actually visited a few fields in western Kentucky in the past few years that have been hit pretty badly by it, and that's target spot. Not to be confused with tar spot of corn. That's a completely different crop and pathogen. So target spot of soybean is another one that's kind of I guess up-and-coming disease that we're seeing more of. There's Septoria brown spot, which is pretty common. We see that in just about every field, really, especially soybean on soybean. And I have been getting some questions about that disease right now, and this is usually on fields that weren't rotated, because that particular pathogen will just overwinter in the previous soybean debris, and it produces spores on that soybean stems and trash that you have out there, especially in a no-till type situation. And it'll produce spores there, and then when it rains, it'll splash those spores up into the lower leaves. And so in some areas of the state that's had some rain, we are seeing some Septoria brown spot. That's usually not something we have to worry about unless we just have a very, very wet year, because that disease really moves up from the bottom of the plant to the top, along with rainfall, and we don't usually have to worry about that unless we get a lot of rain and it gets up to the top of the canopy and later on in the season. But anyway, and the other one that we've got to worry about a little bit is Cercospora leaf blight, and we did have some issues with that last year. That same fungus can cause some seed quality issues known as purple seed stain. And there was some, we usually see a little bit of purple seed stain last year. I think we had a little bit more than we typically do. And that's something you can occasionally get docked for at the elevator as well. Mm-hmm. So those are kind of the ones that I think about as far as being important foliar diseases on soybean here in the state.
You know, Dr. Bradley, I know that, you know, depending on the level of infection that you have, you know, as far as economic losses that you have, I mean, can you just an idea of maybe what some of the economic losses could potentially be from some of those, you know, just to give our folks that are listening an idea of what they're looking at?
Yeah. Well, I think the biggest impacts that I've seen have usually been from either frog eye leaf spot or target spot. I'll just give you an example. So I do a lot of fungicide work at the UKREC in Princeton. And I have a field, I mentioned I've been here since 2015. I think 2016 I was able to get a piece of ground out there, and I have continued to grow soybean in that field. Not something I would suggest for farmers, but for a plant pathologist who, you know, really is looking for disease, that's one of the things I do. And then I'll grow the most susceptible variety I can find. So those are,
right.
Do not take any of that advice at home. But I'm trying to get a high level of disease in my trials so I can evaluate fungicides and see how effective mm-hmm. they are. So just to kind of answer your question, when we have a high level of frog eye leaf spot pressure in that field and I spray an effective fungicide, I could see up to about a 15 to 20 bushel yield response. When
wow.
we do that. So that's sort of a very worst case scenario. I think most farmers that hopefully that are listening to this podcast would not be growing continuous soybean for the last 7 years and,
right.
and not purposefully choosing the most susceptible varieties
sure.
as well. So
sure.
Probably won't see that type of yield loss in a regular production field, I hope, but that just kind of shows you what the mark could be in a worst case scenario. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yep.
Well, you know, you're basically creating that disease triangle. Basically, when you're talking about doing that, you know, just, you know, for a disease to be a problem, you're going to have the right environment, the right host, and you're going to have the pathogen. And for you to do that work, sometimes you're going to have to create your own little disease triangle, so to speak, to be able to do the work that you need to do.
Absolutely, Vicki. And I guess I'm going to have to buy you lunch because you mentioned the disease triangle, and you cannot have a plant pathologist talk for much length at all without at least bringing up the disease triangle, which is having the susceptible host, in this case would be soybean, having the pathogen present, and because I was not rotating, also using no-till practices, which are great, but that also means that that inoculum is, or that pathogen is right there on the soil surface. And then the one thing I can't control very well, though, which is a big part of that triangle, is the weather. And that's usually the ultimate driver of any disease situation, any disease epidemic in all plants, including soybean. And, of course, this year, that's something that we really need to think about because it has been so hot and dry so far, although we've cooled off a little bit this week. I'm not sure when you're going to play this podcast, but this week it has, gosh, if I could save yesterday's weather and today's weather for the entire summer,
right.
I absolutely
oh, yeah.
would.
Yeah.
Low humidity and nice.
Everybody would be happy.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But, of course, we all know that's not going to remain. So high humidity, rainfall, anything that keeps those leaves wet for an extended period of time, or that's the type of conditions that we think about high risk for a lot of these foliar fungal diseases of soybean.
That's
well,
right.
Well, hopefully that's, you know, it's a catch 22. We can avoid some disease issues by avoiding the moisture, but we may avoid a crop altogether if we get too far out there. You know, right now we're in the end of June, fixing to be in the 1st of July, and we're looking at the weather patterns. You know, the long-range forecast is that it's going to change just a little bit. We're looking at a little cooler temperatures in July and some opportunities for rain. So, you know, you've mentioned before, and I know we put out a publication on the efficacy of a lot of fungicides. Talk a little bit about how these fungicides work in relationship to moisture and the presence that they have to work in.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah, so if you know, if conditions do change, and if you have a field that you do have continuous soybean on and maybe a little bit more susceptible variety, and you're making kind of getting towards that decision of making a fungicide decision, I guess, we do have some tools like the fungicide efficacy guides that are available online. There's one on wheat, corn, and soybean. The wheat one came out kind of late this year, but hopefully that's going to be fixed for the next time around. But corn and soybean, that came out early spring, and it will continue to do that. It's updated every year. And those fungicide efficacy guides are based on university data. Not just from the University of Kentucky, but from all over, several states. We all kind of get together in our different meetings. Last few years, it's been virtually, but we discuss efficacy, and a lot of that information that we talk about goes into those fungicide efficacy guides. So where I look for them is on a place called the Crop Protection Network. That's just Crop Protection Network, all one word, .org. And that's a place where a lot of extension information from multiple states go onto that site. There's a lot of publications that are out there on specific diseases, and then these fungicide efficacy guides. So that's a good place to look, you know, when you're trying to make a decision about fungicides. There's a lot of good information there as far as what active ingredients are in each of these fungicide products. There's some information about what chemistry class that each of those individual active ingredients are in. And that's important nowadays because we have some real issues with fungicide resistance in the state, and some that are definitely some real issues and some that are on the horizon. And the biggest class that we have to worry about is called the strobilurin fungicide class. And that's, strobilurins have been around, registered on soybeans since the early 2000s. For a little bit, that was all we had. The threat of soybean rust back in the mid-2000s came around, and that helped get helped push a lot more chemistries being registered. So now we have a few different chemistries, not a whole lot, but a few. But even in a lot of the products we still use, there's still a strobilurin component in it. So we're now seeing resistance in the frog eye leaf spot pathogen to strobilurin fungicides. Actually, every disease I mentioned a few minutes ago, Septoria brown spot, target spot, Cercospora leaf blight. So those strobilurins aren't going to work as well as they used to. And a lot of this is important because of potential supply issues with fungicides, particular products that maybe somebody's been using for the past few years. It's possible that particular product may not be available in high quantities where you are at. So you might have to make a decision on a different fungicide. And that's where this fungicide efficacy guide really does come into play, because you can see, you know, how it's rated as far as controlling different diseases, but you can also look and see what's in it. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things we have to be careful with, is being sure that we're not using a product that's not going to be very effective because of, you know, potential fungicide resistance that's out mm-hmm. there.
You know, we encourage people listening to this podcast, we always encourage them to go to their extension office, no matter what state they're in. And you know, then this is a perfect example of several states working together to put together this guide. So, I mean, to get the correct information, you obviously need to go see your extension office in the state that you're in or the county you're in or whatever. And you can get online and, like you're talking about, and do some things too. But you want to be sure you get the correct information, especially when you're dealing with these fungicides like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you also need to make sure that you get UID, have a correct ID on what disease you're looking at. And so we all know that a lot of diseases can look a whole lot alike, especially in those early stages, I think.
Especially to the naked eye. I mean, it's,
that's right. It's, you know, and it's tough to see, especially if you're not trained, you know, like you are, Dr. Bradley. I know you can pick up things quicker than a lot of us are, but I know I've heard you say before that even sometimes you've got to have a lens at least to be able to really look at that. You can't just say, and because there are a lot of environmental things that cause, you know, there's a lot of things that cause spots on leaves, because we as agents get a lot of calls about, well, you know, not just crops, but even gardens or flowers or whatever, that they've got these spots showing up. And I think it's just really important to make sure you have the correct identification so that you're, if the need be to apply it, that you're applying the right product to the right disease.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's really good advice. I'm still fooled occasionally on things. But there's not just pathogens, but there's, you know, potential herbicide drift, potential, fertility problems and drought and lots of things that can cause some weird looking plants and spots and all that. So it is important to get a good identification. And even in the pathogen world, sometimes there's things like bacteria that cause. We have a bacterial spot on soybean that occurs, and of course, a fungicide is not going to do anything for a bacterium. So that's getting the proper identification is very important, absolutely. And it's important to work with your county agents when you do have questions on things. And we have some facilities at the University of Kentucky that agents can use to help. Dive in a little bit deeper on samples that might come in and help get a better identification on some things.
I'll add another resource in there that I've relied upon heavily throughout my career, and that's Kentucky Pest News. The information that's shared in there is about as timely as there is as far as agents goes, and it's good to see some of that information, you know, having an outlet to be able to get out there.
Well, in this day and time, it's a lot easier to get information out, and it's a lot easier for you to find timely information than it was 20 years ago. And so there's always good information, but there is information that's not good too. So mm-hmm. always be aware if you are doing some kind of a search that you know that you've got a credible source. And if you will look at land-grant universities, most of the time, those publications that come out, that's research-based information. So if you're listening from not in Kentucky and somewhere else, look for that land-grant university and the publications on that, and you're going to know that's credible information that's, that you don't have to worry about whether that's right or wrong. So,
yeah, and we're doing, you know, county extension offices here in Kentucky. We obviously do some identification and things of this nature. Dr. Bradley, tell us a little bit about with the situation that happened at Princeton. Of course, the tornado just pretty well wiping out the facilities. Just real quick, tell us how we're handling those disease identifications and those things right now.
Sure. Yeah. So, yeah, unfortunately, the tornado did wipe out our research center, and that included the plant disease diagnostic lab that was at Princeton at the UKREC. We still do have the PDDL, plant disease diagnostic lab, at Lexington on campus there. So things are a little bit different this year. We are asking pretty much for samples to go through agents because we do have to do a little bit of a first step to see if it's important or not important enough, but if it really needs to go to the plant disease diagnostic lab.
Yep.
Because we did not increase the number of people that are working over there in Lexington. So it's the same number that was at that lab. Our diagnostician that was here at Princeton had retired right after. It was a planned retirement, but it happened right after the tornado. And so we've kind of put a pause on a lot of these things until we have some facilities to be able to be back up and running. But it is still operational in Lexington, and so if there are issues that you see, it is important to take that to your county office, and then we'll kind of guide it from there on where it needs to go. And of course, I'm here for the agents and others as well to try to help make some of those decisions when samples come in.
Yeah, and I encourage folks to take some high quality some pictures. You know, that really, I can shoot that to Dr. Bradley, and he can kind of say, well, yeah, you probably need to send that in, or you don't need to send it in. This is what this is. So, but if you can take some really good pictures, and really good pictures is not 10 feet away going, this whole field is infected, you know. So take some high-quality close-up pictures where they can kind of zoom it in and kind of look at it. That sure does help a lot, too.
Even of healthy plants. So I mean, it's always important. Of course, you know, when you get a picture, you don't see the whole picture, right, of what's really happening out there. So it is important to take a picture of, if there's like a delineation of really sick plants versus really healthy plants, it's good to kind of get that in the picture. I'd like to see what a normal healthy plant looks like that from that field, so I can also make those comparisons to a sick plant and patterns. That's something else that's really important to pick up. A lot of disease issues, sometimes there's no pattern. So if you see a regular pattern out there, that probably means that's some kind of an application error or something like that could be happening. So those are things that an individual plant that gets submitted, to a county office, those are things that you can't figure out from just looking at one single plant.
Well, and I think the important thing to point out about you saying that is to find that out, you're going to have to scout your fields. You're going to have to get out in them, and you're going to have to look.
Yeah.
That's just got to be a priority, to just go out there and look around and see what you've got and really walk the field and not just in the first couple of feet either, just really get out there and scout the field and see what you got, see what you have going on, because you're not going to know that if you don't, because you're not going to be able to see it.
And you can see those patterns that Dr. Bradley was talking about a lot of times that there may be human-made application errors or those things when you're out there. And so when you're sending in a picture, you're not just going to send one, you're going to send several, and then send that into your agent and let those folks send it on, the ones that they feel like are the most important.
And give us as much information as you possibly can. Yeah. Like when you call, if you can have, approximately planting date, if you got a variety.
What's been applied.
Yes.
Yes. I mean, and when.
Yes. I mean, the more information that we have, the better it's going to be for us to try to help you. And then if we don't know, we're going to go to our specialist, and they are going to ask us for that information as well. So just too much information is really better than not enough. Because we can weed out what we don't need.
Yep.
Yeah. We never get the easy ones. You know, by the time it makes it to me, it's never an easy one. So you're right, Vicki. It truly is detective work. And so having all of these things, all of that information available is super helpful, because it is really kind of really being a detective in a lot of these cases.
Yeah, I got a sample back in the spring of probably five or six really good pictures of some corn, but I didn't have any information at all. And of course, I didn't see any of it. And I sent it to Chad, and he looked at it and he says, "Ask me all these questions." I said, "I don't know. You got the same information I got."
Yeah.
So, you know, so you have to go back and collect that information. It just saves a step. It really does. If you can provide all that information ahead of time, it saves a step.
When we're down to one lab, saving that time is going to make a big difference in the time it takes to get you your answer
information.
Back.
Yeah.
And I'll go ahead and add to that lab. It doesn't just get corn, soybeans, and wheat. That lab gets your
ornamentals.
Yes, it gets your landscape plants. It gets your vegetable plants. It's getting your nursery plants. All of the it's not just getting corn, soybeans, wheat, and tobacco.
I know in the office I've been trying to handle as many of those as I could, partly because it's not a production related issue, but mainly because we don't want to bog down the lab any more than we have to. Now, if it were, say, landscape plants from a production situation, a nursery or something like that, that's one thing. Plants right out of the yard is important, and as loved as they are, we want to try to take care of them as much as we can and not slow down the lab with them.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, talking about scouting, you know, that's something that we talk about a lot on this show, and the importance of scouting and really knowing what you have. And as far as disease, scouting for diseases, talk a little bit about timing. I know you touched on that earlier, but just timing. When do these farmers need to be getting out there in their fields and looking for these, let's just say those top three diseases that you've mentioned? You know, what's the timing on the scouting? And then talk about the timing on an application. What are we looking at there? If there warrants an application, if there's enough disease present and that warrants an application, you know, what timing are we looking at there?
Yeah, I don't think it would hurt to be out there now, actually, to be looking. But I think maybe more critically would be right when maybe you're starting to get to about R1, where you just starting to have flowers out there on the soybean plants. Usually, foliar fungicide applications on soybean are going to be applied right around the pod stage. So that's R3 is what we call it, little tiny pods starting to form. So that would give you a little bit of a heads up on what's going to happen by the time you'd be making that application if you're out there right around flowering. I mentioned earlier that that's also a time when that canopy is kind of closed and there's less, wind flow in that canopy in the foliage, and that's when we might start to see some of these diseases showing up. But yeah, that's scouting. There's really two things here. There's scouting, which is important to capture what you're seeing. But the other thing is, you know, we don't really have sweep nets and things like that some of the entomologists are. The things that are causing disease are microscopic, so they're tiny spores. Some of those may already be on there, and you don't see symptoms yet as well. So that's another thing that can happen. So we don't really have hard and fast thresholds for some of the plant diseases that I work on. A lot of these are based on risk. And so I think it's a combination of scouting and disease risk. When I think about disease risk, it's really going back to that disease triangle. Things like... is this rotated soybean or is this continuous soybean? So obviously when we have continuous soybean, you're going to have more pathogens out there. You're going to have a higher inoculum density, if you will, a lot more spores, lots of things out there that could potentially infect and cause disease. So that risk kind of bumps up a little bit when you're on continuous soybean. Knowing about the susceptibility of the variety that you planted. Is this a variety that's really susceptible to frog eye leaf spot, or is this one that has a pretty high level of resistance? So You know, if you're kind of more towards that susceptible side, then that also bumps up the risk as well, right? Planting date actually can make a difference here too, to some degree, and maybe not as important as the other two things I mentioned, but we do see that the later you plant, that there might be just a little bit more risk of some of these foliar diseases. The main reason is that there might be a lot more inoculum available. As you go through the season, there's going to be more and more spores, and later planted soybean could still be not as fully mature. And so, you know, there could be more spores on a crop that's not quite as far along. So the potential for it to do that pathogen, do more damage is there. But ultimately, as I mentioned earlier, weather is the ultimate driver. So of course, we're not always so great at predicting the weather, but you can at least kind of get an idea of what we're in. And in right now for this year, we've been really dry for the most part. And so I think the risk of having a high level of disease is probably lower. And, probably the main point is fungicides just really aren't automatic. And you really got to kind of put all these things together. It should not be an automatic decision, let me put it that way. You really have to pull together these scouting along with the risk of disease and kind of make a decision along those lines.
Yeah, I think that it's in the last several years, I think some of that's been just part of the plan from the very beginning is making, you know, fungicide applications and, you know, and there's not any kind of scouting or decision making, you know, going into those. And
yeah, people are just making them. I mean, they're just making them just because that's what they do. Kind of like spraying a burn down. What you do.
That's right. And they're putting it when they're doing their budgets and doing their operating loans and mm-hmm. and working on all of that. I mean, that the cost of that is already in there, and because they know they're going to do it.
Yep.
And
I think this year may be a little bit different. I think we're going to have to, from a supply issue or whatever the problem may be, you may want to take a little more time and put a little more thought into the process of whether you're going to spray a fungicide on. And if that pressure is there, then yes, you pull the trigger and you spray that. But if the diseases are not there, then maybe this is a year that you kind of, you know, hang out and maybe not do that.
And you only know that by scouting.
That's right.
We talk a lot about soil test as well, and just this year with fertilizer issues, being able to soil test, knowing what your P and K levels are, if you had the ability to maybe lay off a little bit or even skip a year, heaven forbid, this was a year to do that, and it may be the same way with our fungicides, and the only way you know that's by scouting. So.
Yep. And that kind of brings us up to our timely tip, Vicki.
It does.
I'm going to let you roll right into
that. Well, that's what I was going to say.
You, ain't that nice
he's going to let me do let the timely you. Tip. Thank you, David. I appreciate that. But I was just getting ready to say that, too, and we've kind of already talked about that. But in all seriousness, you know, fungicide applications, like Carl just said, they should not be automatic. You know, overuse of fungicides, you know, it can lead to fungicide resistance problems that he also talked about. And then spraying fungicides when disease isn't present, it just compounds the supply chain issues that we've been seeing. And it limits the product availability to a producer that may really need it because that producer may have disease pressure and really needs that product, and he or she can't get that. So just keep that in mind. And then with the price, the input price that we've seen this year, there's – if there ever was a year to just not pull the trigger on that, this is the year. So yeah, just be aware of that. Just put some thought into it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Sounds good. Well, does anybody else have anything they want to add to it? We're probably about that point. We're going to start wrapping it up. So, Carl, we appreciate you being here with us. It's good information. We hope to have you back on sometime. Like David had mentioned earlier, if you ever have an idea of something you want to get out, something you want to put out, we'd be glad to sit down with you and try to do this again. So we may look towards the fall and have a wrap-up or a recoup of what this year's been like. I think would be good information for a lot of people. If we get any rain.
Well, thank you for having me. It's been a load of fun, and I'd be happy to do this again.
Sounds great. So we appreciate you being here. We thank our host for all the information, and we thank our listeners for joining in. We hope you've enjoyed our show, and we'll make plans to join us again next week for our next episode. And until then, remember, Kentucky Ag matters.
that's a wrap.
Thank you.
Don't forget his koozie. Is it in your truck?
I feel like I might have been talking too long.